So, here we are, September 1st. We sort of were wondering, whatever happened to summer? It sort of flew by, and before you know it, there's all sorts of Halloween directions out now, all sorts of decorations. So, it's sort of happy fall. We'd like to just briefly mention some of the announcements that here in Philadelphia, our lodge does its part of spread broadcasting the teachings twice a week. On Wednesday evenings from 7:45 to 9 p.m., we have a study class. We will be next Wednesday coming up still working on the notes on the Bhagavad Gita, and the discussion will be for the fourth, self-evident truths. And also on Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 4:45 or 7:30, we have a reference library that's opened, and there's always a student in there that can help you with any reference you might want to look up, read the part for that evening or for the day. Then, beside the library and the class, then of course we have our Sundays. Now, the Sundays during the summer, in which we are still going to be continuing with items from the book of HPB's Isis Unveiled. Next Sunday, we will be discussing from Isis karma. For those of you who don't have the books at home, on the table, you can pick up copies for next Sunday's session that you may take home and study, and then hopefully you'll bring it on next Sunday. All the work done at any lodge, which is situated throughout the world, and we have over 28 situated out of the world, and of course there are reading groups of smaller groups. All of them are Atanas, and yet at each and every one, the work that needs to be done is done by on a voluntary basis. One can come as a listener, one can work their way up to becoming a student to the point where they can take on parts or do declarations or fundamentals, but it's a gradual stepping, and each one does what they can on their own. And as we said, the general work that keeps classes going, and there are no dues that are asked, or nor is there a passing of the hat, and yet all the lodges situated throughout the world are kept going by voluntary contributions of not just the time and service, but also of money. All are most needed and all are most welcomed to attend either of these classes. So we will start off with our Isis Unveiled assignment for this week, and we're going to be speaking about the powers in man and nature. And just a little thing of thinking is, if we can keep in mind that no energy or force is available without matter, and no matter can act without force. So we will start off with our first reading.
To comprehend the principles of natural law involved in the several phenomena here and after described, the reader must keep in mind the fundamental propositions of the Oriental philosophy, which we have successfully elucidated. Let us recapitulate very that happens is the result of law, eternal, immutable, ever active. Apparent miracle is but the operation of forces antagonistic to what Dr. W.B. Carpenter, FRS, a man of great learning but little knowledge, calls the well-ascertained laws of nature. Like many of his class, Dr. Carpenter ignores the fact that there may be laws once known, now unknown to science. Second, nature is triune. There is a visible, objective nature, an invisible, indwelling, energizing nature, the exact model of the other, and its vital principle. And above these two, spirit, source of all forces, alone, eternal and indestructible. The lower two constantly change. The higher third does not. Third, man is also triune. He has his objective physical body, his vitalizing astral body or soul, the real man, and these two are brooded over and illuminated by the third, the sovereign, the immortal spirit. When the real man succeeds in merging himself with the latter, he becomes an immortal entity. Fourth, magic, as a science, is the knowledge of these principles and of the way by which the omniscience and omnipotence of the spirit and its control over nature's forces may be acquired by the individual while still in the body. Magic as an art is the application of this knowledge in practice. Fifth, arcane knowledge misapplied is sorcery. Beneficently used, true magic or wisdom.
Let's just take a little bit of time to maybe sink things in. So any individual might know, are part of the 10 items of HPBs, but these are the ones that we wanted to concentrate on for the beginning ones. And this whole idea of miracle, does anyone have any comments or questions on this idea of miracle? Because a lot of the world, we keep saying, oh, it was a miracle, it happened, and it's, we never really sometimes think about what we're saying. If we understand more, we might understand what we should say and not say. Did you have a point?
I had a question about item number 3.
Oh, all right, we were going to take them in order, but we can take yours. Oh,
okay. What she refers to as the sovereign and immortal spirit, is that what we call the monad? Or is that the ego?
No, ego. The ego?
Ego.
Okay. That immortal spirit, that true spirit that comes from the one deific principle, you would call that more its shining of a unit of intelligence would be the monad. The ego is that part of our nature that is immortal, that goes from life to life, from reincarnation to reincarnation. Like pearls on a chain, each little life, well, for the whole vast period of evolution, this ego keeps reincarnating to balance and have it harmonious and know that he is part of that deific principle. He is a spark or a ray of it, we could say.
So in this case, is it the ego or is it the monad?
Well, if you take it this way, you sort of have to make it like a combination of it. without the monad going through all these different degrees, shall we say, of matter, there would be, quote, no ego at the time. An ego is at, we are at the highest point in the evolutionary kingdoms that are around the reincarnating ego. Yes.
We've heard it described that all of the kingdoms of nature contain that monad. It's gaining experience as a rock, a mineral kingdom, a vegetable kingdom, etc. And when it reaches the time for the human form, the difference is mind becomes self-conscious. So the monad ceases to be just the monad, but is now lit up and is choosing and is willing in every action. That then we call the ego.
Yes, and that's why we mentioned at the beginning, no energy or force, the monad, without matter. It needs matter, it needs a form. And yet matter would not exist without that power of force. So as was stated, in the lower kingdoms, everything is done under natural impulse. But when the monad reaches the human state, as was stated, we now have self-consciousness. Those other kingdoms do not have, quote, self-consciousness. Yes?
Well, it might help if we just for the time being think of the term oneness, unity. And if we always keep that unity, then as we proceed and new types come up, new ideas sprout from our study, we can always refer back to the sense of unity of all life. So we think that that's the best way to start, because we can get confused.
And that idea of unity, that everything within this whole universe has that part of that unity. We're all sort of, shall we say, rays or sparks of that one deific principle. All, every degree of intelligence. And we do acknowledge there is intelligence in the lower kingdoms. But as we said, not self-intelligence, but we do see intelligence on that field. So again, that might help explain the idea of, you know, there's a visible and there's the invisible part of nature. In general, nature and man, there is a part that we all see and know and act through, that physical part. But there is that invisible part of all of nature and of man. And it is understanding that can take us back to understanding what a miracle is. A miracle, quote, is not some miraculous happening, but it is one having the knowledge of knowing the steps to make anything happen. And it's that knowledge that for most in our period of evolution, that unless one goes back to the ancient teachings, they don't understand what makes what we call, quote, a miracle today. Yes?
And just by knowing about karma in regards to miracles, it puts a whole new perspective onto what, you know, when they talk about the survivor syndrome, mm-hmm. when everybody else dies in a cataclysmic event and somebody lives, you know, what was their karma that put them in that place, but at the same time, it enabled them to stay alive? And people think, well, I guess there's a higher purpose for my life. Indeed, maybe there is. But it's just a totally different perspective. no medical reason for them to go well, that kind of thing.
So this goes on, and it's something one should think about, that if it's like if we look at the ideas of a student in school, the teacher knows the steps to get to the mathematical answer. For the student starting out, you can give them the answer, but they can't tell you how do I get to that answer. So the idea is there is knowledge, so nothing is that mysterious if one has the time and the energy and his, shall we say, devoted himself to trying to learn about himself and all of nature, that he can understand that. And that brings us with that idea, this idea of nature. Nature too has its visible and its objective nature, but yet it has its indwelling, invisible nature too, that energizes all of life around us. And as it states, that spirit that we spoke about, that deific principle, that's the power and the force that keeps it moving. So bringing that into it, and then we spoke about yours, and we would like to just spend a few minutes on this idea of magic. You know, they state that when the pupil is ready, the teacher will be found waiting. So when we talk about this idea of magic, and if we understand this whole idea, it is true to say, it says, true magic, technically, is wisdom. It's knowing part of these ancient inner teachings that we sort of bypassed in our time. And when we say for those individuals who have this true magic, who have this true understanding and wisdoms, we would think of them as like adepts or great sages or wisdom, yet not one, for instance, so that we understand. Mediumship, for instance, is the opposite of adeptship. One has no control, the other has full control. An adept has full control of all his whole nature. So with just starting off with these first, to some the ideas might seem very strange, but then after thinking about them and trying to study about them and find out where we can get the information, it broadens our scope of just who and what we really are. So these first five are interesting, and as was said, they're part of the full ten. These are the ones that we think are the most depth, in other words, to start off with, versus the others of these ten items. Yes.
Well, We all perform magic every day at our level of existence. You know, walking, talking, all those kind of things we learn, but they're like sort of magical. And that we keep on forgetting that we are divine in potential, and that man is a magnet. He's a dynamic force, and through his actions, he draws things to himself. So if we want to know knowledge, we have to purify our nature. We have to become in control of this lower animal. And by doing that, then knowledge sort of comes to you. You know, but if we all fight this world that we live in, it's always attracting us here, attracting us there, and it's all for desire. Nothing of any everlasting quality to it.
Well, if we keep in mind that the ancient teachings tell us that thinking man, of which we are, has been on this planet over 18 million years. And if we look at the idea of karma with the sister doctrine of reincarnation, How many times do you think, approximately, let's say 1500 years in between, that this thinking man that we know as ourselves today has been coming back? And wouldn't one think of the purpose of, we're here to learn lessons that we obviously don't know, because we're not in balance, and we've gotten so imbued with the matter, the physical, that we see, that we forget there is an inner part of our nature that is immortal, that has to go from one life to another life to another life, to go through experience, to gain from, quote, the lessons. Some of us are slow learners. Some of us are faster learners. But the fact is, each one makes his own pace, and how we go through something and learn something makes the degree of the karma yet to be worked off. So we are very complex beings, and we just don't give ourselves true credit for it because we only acknowledge what we see in the mirror. So now we want to go on to the second part of this, and then we'll continue on with questions and comments.
Fanaticism in religion, fanaticism in science, or fanaticism in any other question becomes a hobby and cannot but blind our senses. It will ever be useless to argue with the fanatic. And here we cannot help admiring once more the profound knowledge of human nature which dictated to Mr. Sergeant Cox the following words delivered in the same address as alluded to before. There is no more fatal fallacy than that the truth will prevail by its own force, that it has only to be seen to be embraced. In fact, the desire for the actual truth exists in very few minds, and the capacity to discern it in fewer still. When men say that they are seeking the truth, they mean that they are looking for evidence to support some prejudice or prepossession. Their beliefs are molded to their wishes. They see all and more than all that seems to tell for that which they desire. They are blind as bats to whatever tells against them. The scientists are no more exempt from this common failing than are others. It is on the indestructible tablets of the astral light that is stamped the impression of every thought we think and every act we perform, and that future events, effects of long forgotten causes, are already delineated as a vivid picture for the eye of the seer and prophet to follow. Memory, the despair of the materialist, the enigma of the psychologist, the sphinx of science, is to the student of old philosophies merely a name to express that power which man unconsciously exerts and shares with many of the inferior animals. To look with inner sight into the astral light and there behold the images of past sensations and incidents, instead of searching for the cerebral ganglia for micrographs of the living and the dead, of scenes we have visited, of incidents in which we have borne a part, they went to the vast repository where the records of every man's life, as well as every pulsation of the visible cosmos, are stored for all eternity. The flash of memory, which is traditionally supposed to show a drowning man every long-forgotten scene of his mortal life, as the landscape is revealed to the traveler by intermittent flashes of lightning, is simply the sudden glimpse which the struggling soul gets into the silent galleries where his history is depicted in imperishable colors.
Now, this brings on another point when we start talking about the astral light. For some individuals, there is an understanding of this astral light, and that in other parts of our nature, we know we have our waking nature, we know we have our sleeping nature, and we know we have our dreaming nature. And then we have that nature that we just call, it's a complete sleep type of a thing. And the idea that this astral light is physically around this globe, and that everything has an astral. And when we say everything, we're talking about in the way of form. And also, if we will remember, there are more, when we say astral light is one thing, when we say astral body, a movement of the astral body, we have to understand there's more than just the astral. And this idea that the astral body for the human form is the same as the astral body for the animal forms, the vegetable forms, and the mineral forms. There is something that, nothing can be built on nothing, shall we say, or something can't be built on nothing. You need some basis, some form, some framework. So this idea of being able to see into the astral light, some can in different parts of their nature, in their deep sleep, shall we say, can look into parts of the astral. But we have to understand that with the different degrees, usually the stuff that is closest to us is mostly, we could say, of the mundane nature, that if you actually see, that you might not understand what you're seeing. And then above, to the very highest degree of astral, we could say Akasha. The Akasha records, for instance, that are mentioned in the philosophy, and that she also mentions in her Isis Unveiled, of everything that has ever happened, plus the foreseeing, everything that is to happen. It's not like it's predestiny, it's just the forms are there. The information is there. And we need to understand that as thinking human beings, we carry with us in each lifetime fragments from past lives. And they can be expressed during this lifetime, or it's just like the idea of there's just so much that you could do in any one lifetime. And karmically, we get the idea the scale is really off balance. For us to learn to balance and get it up, it seems if we've been incarnating that long as thinking human beings, one would say, well, gee, it seems like we could be further advanced. There is that possibility that we might have got a little hung up too long with the forms and have not left to our nature, our powers and intelligence in our nature that's within us that records everything we've gained and seen.
It might help us understand that after life, we're here listening to what is being said. We are perhaps looking down at the floor or looking at the wall, but then we listen to the speaker and say, oh, I see what you mean. I don't see it that way. So this might help us understand the terminology that you're referring to, and that we all do that, even though we don't know.
We don't. We do that quite often, yes?
In the Ocean of Theosophy, there's a couple chapters that deal with the septenary nature of man.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, they said this is secret esoteric knowledge that was given out in the last century. The reason for it being hidden is that they were fearful of materialism taking that knowledge and subverting it to harm them. So, I forget what I'm saying.
Oh, it'll come. It'll come. Yes.
Since we're working off, as you said, our karmic imbalances over the past 18.5 million years, I'd like to know what caused the imbalance to begin with. Wasn't the original experiment therefore flawed? I mean, why bring us or why have us emanate in this plane of existence 18 million years ago if it was known that we're going to fail to begin with and then work off the karma for the next 18 million?
But who is the creator of all this? We are. We are the creator of all this at the very beginning. If in truth we are really true spiritual beings, and we came and incarnated into forms to help on the great humanity with evolution, which is, we have to admit, we live in a world of cycles, constantly changing and moving. That's in a way what we could call the karma, the cycles. And we live in a universe of law, the law of karma, of cause and effect. But you have to remember, we are the conductors of cause and effect. We set up the causes, we'll get the effects. We started off as pure spirit. And as we were coming along through different vast periods of times of evolution, what has happened is we've gotten enamored with the form that we're using. The forms and the lives that make up the forms have been sort of molded so that in today's world you have, quote, materialistic thinkers. But there was a period, again, which will come again because of cycles, when everything was on a natural, even level, where the idea of war did not exist other than in the mind. So those periods will come again, where the pureness will come again. But for us, we have to gain it back, and we have to also remember our responsibility to the lower kingdoms. We have within, for instance, our physical body, all of the lower kingdoms. All that intelligence is in this body that has been trained to do certain things. Well, if we look at the idea that if it is our responsibility, and this whole idea of cycles and evolution within the cosmos, we, in one way, are very small, indeed. And in the other way, we're like the kingpin, because it's how we act and think on our level that's going to influence and deeply influence all the lower kingdoms, all the lives of intelligence that are not self-conscious, but the lives of intelligence that are in the lower kingdoms. So that intelligence can also move up. So it's not like we were a predestiny of this is what it's to be, because we have had other periods of times of evolution where there have been, we've had the, quote, the golden age, the silver age, the bronze age, the Iron Age, which we are in now. We are in the deepest part of this whole evolutionary process, the most solid, dense part we can be in. We have to work our way up again. So it's us. It's our way of thinking and our way of making choices that's going to make the difference on how we become, shall we say, depths of nature. You had a point?
Yeah, well, some of us went to the International Philosophy Conference.
Can you speak up a little?
Yeah.
Some of us went to the International Philosophy Conference, and there was a dinner where we had this guy who's a spiritual comedian.
Keep it to
And he said, you know, in this world, there are two types of mystics. There are the pessimistics and the optimistics. Maybe you guys heard this. The pessimistics always say the world's going to end, the sky is falling, humanity has failed. And then the optimistics will say, no, we're still evolving. It looks like the sky is falling because we're all ascending. And I bring that up because, like you were saying with the cycles, a lot of times, you know, we don't see the greater cycle. We're in the part where all we think is, we look around, we see failure. But then there's a reason why these cycles exist. And to me, it's more that we have to go through the challenging period of the lower cycles in order so that we can have more wisdom and we understand what energies are in us so that we can manage and regulate those energies better. And when we control those energies, the golden cycle will go higher.
And those cycles historically, or shall we say prehistorically, as far as the history of today, in the ancient teachings, they speak of those periods of times. But again, you brought up that point. We sometimes sort of live with blinders on because we only see a certain area. We don't see the whole. And there are smaller cycles within grander cycles that must be expressed and experienced. It's what we learn from it, how we live with it, and how we adjust to it that makes the difference. So technically, we are very responsible for the way everything is going, not just in our own little world. Do you have a point?
I wanted to hear this, Thomas.
Oh,
I was going to say, then are we our own gods?
Are we our own gods? Yes, in potentiality, we have that part of our nature that can reach, which we would call perfectibility. But again, perfectibility is up to a point, and then there's always more to learn. Even the great masters and great sages down through the ages, it's not just what they just learned, there's always more to learn. But we have the potentiality of being able to express true harmony in an altruistic way all through the universe. So we have that potentiality. It's what we do with it. And it starts with first trying to understand who and what we really are. The ancient philosophy and theosophy states that we're a sevenfold nature human being. We need to first find out what those sevenfold nature is, then find out in everyday living what part of my nature is acting and non-reacting in any situation. We're very complex beings, but for most of us, as I was saying, you have a pessimistic or optimistic. There's more to it than that. Yes.
The issue of karma, I think that Mr. Judge says that we shouldn't dwell on past events. We shouldn't, you know, look at what we've done, but we should be ever present in the moment that when this karma comes to us, how do we react to it? Okay? That's all it's about. Because you cannot control what's in the past or what's in the future. You can only control what's in the present. So your attitude, you know, your motives for things, all of these are subtle energies that make up our karma. You know, so it said every thought is recorded, every act is recorded. Well, this is how, in that sevenfold concept, the astral world is part of our astral world.
True.
We have an astral body, and that's how we communicate with all the other kingdoms. You can't do it through the mind. You have to do it through your astral or your intelligence of your heart. And you see people be able to get along with animals and be, you know, it's amazing. You know,
it's natural.
Yes.
Because they've had to work on it in previous lifetimes, that in this lifetime it's very natural. There is a camaraderie with the animal, whereas others don't have it. I mean, and this is just one little situation, but keep in mind that idea of there's the visible part of our nature and there's the invisible part of our nature. What we need to shine through and learn through is that invisible part of our nature should come to the foreground, way in the back.
Yeah, and to go on with that idea of karma, some people, when they talk, they first hear about karma and reincarnation, they'll say, "What? That's predestination. I don't have any choice. I don't have any control over what I do. It's never going to make a difference." But it does. It's like karma, as was said, is bringing from the past up to the future to balance the, you know, that the universe is out of kilter. And you have choices. Man is a thinker, man's a dynamo, and we have choices that when our duty comes to us, we have the choice as to how we can react. In a way, it is predestined because that duty is coming to us from the past. But that's where it stops, and then we have the choice as to how we want to go forward with it.
And it would seem that, you know, in every lifetime, there's just so much, shall we say, karma baggage that you can express in any one lifetime. And the fact of it is, it's like being in school. Until you learn the lesson and learn how to balance, the lesson's going to keep coming back, and keep coming back, and keep coming back. Because there is a balance to everything in the universe. We're no exception. Once we learn that balance and that harmony that we can exist within, it's going to change our attitude completely. Now, we'd like to, before we go any further with on these questions, just take up this last section, the things starting with volume one, and then we can come back to questions.
Dreams, forebodings, impressions, prognostications, and presentiments are impressions left by our astral spirit on our brain, which receives them more or less distinctly according to the proportion of blood with which it is supplied during the hours of sleep. The more the body is exhausted, the freer is the spiritual man, and the more vivid the impressions of our soul's memory. In heavy and robust sleep, dreamless and uninterrupted, upon awakening to outside consciousness, men may sometimes remember nothing, but the impressions of scenes and landscapes which the astral body saw in its peregrinations are still there, though lying latent under the pressure of matter. They may be awakened at any moment, and then, during such flashes of man's inner memory, there is an instantaneous interchange of energies between the visible and the invisible universes. Between the micrographs of the cerebral ganglia and the photosynographic galleries of the astral light, a current is established, and a man who knows that he has never visited a body nor seen the landscape in person that he recognizes may well assert that still has he seen and knows them, for the acquaintance was formed while traveling in spirit.
This ties in what we're discussing right now, so that we understand everybody dreams. Not everybody remembers their dreams. And when we think about it, this physical body is put in sort of like a trance type state. It's at rest. yet we're seeing, we're hearing, we're tasting. Some dream in color, some dream in black and white. But the fact of the matter is, if it's not these physical eyes and tongue and ears that are doing this, what is seeing, tasting, going through situations, meeting people, going places, doing things, what is that that's going on? Because a lot of the times, it's situations we have no knowledge of. I don't know how, but I can describe it in detail. But I've never been there. I've never seen a picture of it. I've never read about this. I've never seen a movie with this scene. There is a part of that's part of that invisible nature we were speaking of that's actually doing the real, because it states that the real seeing, hearing, and tasting is coming from that astral form that makes up the astral body. So it's interesting when you think about it and you start questioning it, where is this coming from? It's not coming from outside. It's coming from within, yes.
So this traveling in spirit, is that the same as astral travel? Because we're warned against trying to travel astrally.
Astral travel is not the same as this. The fact of the matter is that you can leave your physical body in the astral, but you have to have the knowledge of how and why. For most of us, if it has happened, it's probably been a fluke, because it's very scary and we advise against it, because one, that astral body, if it is out of our physical form, and some individual has the strength, they can come in and take over our physical body. And this would be probably, if we look at the idea of the white magician and the black magician, this would be one that is a black magician. Magic is knowledge. It's what we do with the knowledge that's going to color it, either balance it or unbalance it, either selfishly used or altruistically used. But it is knowledge, and it's a vast responsibility. So the idea of trying to astral projection, there can be that point where you cannot get back in. Yes.
Mr. Judge actually speaks a little bit to that in letters that have helped me. And he says that, yes, there, you know, at a certain point along the path, you're going to realize that at night you've been out somewhere, and, you know, for whoever that may be. But he says that's entirely different than willfully, in the middle of the day, going into meditation and projecting yourself out of the body. Because when one does that, somebody shaking their head, no, I'm speaking, please give me a minute to affirm myself. When one does that, his physical astral is awake, but at night, when your physical body is asleep, so too is your physical astral, and it's so to speak mortified, and you're protected. If you move out and go somewhere and do something, you're not bringing the physical astral with you, and it's not usable by someone else. If you go out in the middle of the day, you're literally bursting through and opening it up, and you could potentially be opening it up for anybody or somebody else to come in.
And so
it's very
dangerous. So no, that is not. But what we're saying is, with this idea of traveling in spirit, it's your being able to see and hear on an essence that we can't do when we're here in a physical body. Yes.
Well, the question earlier was that man, woman, we are the creators of the universe. We are creating everything that comes to us, and we do it in this material world, because we are, again, a dynamic force. Our attitude and our motive are of supreme importance, and that these acts that we perform, if we can purify our acts through spiritual knowledge, and it really just means controlling this lower nature, not letting us go to this or to that, but somewhere in the middle where we can keep a steady understanding of life. Like if we're pulled one way and pulled the other way, we're always off balance. We have to find that middle, that ground of the three fundamentals of life, and that we should understand that and begin there and just create. So you're creating now.
That's true.
That knowledge. So get knowledge and create the world that you want.
And that, and that's we have to understand. We're that one. And it's like there is a part of our nature, that true higher nature that we really are, that is like blocked because it can't get through. And it knows. But we cannot get through to let it be expressed. So what happens is we're that creator, good, bad, or indifferent. We've created it. But the thing of it is this idea that this personality, our way of thinking, has made it so cumbersome. It's like we need to have a purifier or a filter to be able to get to our true higher nature so it can be expressed.
So just to circle back to astral travel. So I think astral travel is dependent on the motives that you have to do it in the first place. So for example, if your motives are there to invade someone's privacy, to cause something in the state of sorcery, then you invite those kind of beings to take over your body. But if your motive is there for pure knowledge, things to advance, then I think you probably are protected, and so I think your physical body will probably be more in a protected state, and that silver cord will keep it connected.
But that would seem to us to be that of an adept, someone that has learned to have full control of their whole nature. Can anyone in this room think that we might have that at this point of our evolution? We leave it up as a question.
So follow up to that. So I think unless we try, and we're here in this world to keep on trying, we will never reach that state of adaption. So I think if we're afraid to go there, and fear is what's going to hold us back, then it will be this fear that will invite these entities into you.
Well, that's again a matter of opinion, and with the ancient philosophy, we are warned against delving into any psychic type of work, whether it's reading someone else's mind, whether it's astral projecting, or what it is. When the time comes, there are natural powers and forces within us that are going to be able to be expressed and will be natural, not something forced or worked on in that. So when we think of this idea of altruism, if we think of this idea to be a help to humanity, if we think of this idea of a brotherhood of humanity, if we think in more larger feelings and start working our way away from our personal wants and needs and things we think we need to clear up the channel so it can come through. Yes?
Yeah, regarding the astral travel, there are dangers in the astral plane, truly. However, there's never been a cases of people traveling astrally and their body has been taken over and they just went off on some tangent with that body. That is absolute hogwash. I mean, there are thousands of cases, okay, of today, thousands of people doing this, and there are thousands of research cases of people traveling astrally, okay, where their bodies never been taken away. Never.
Do you have any?
Yes, I have writings all over the wazoo. I mean, tens and tens of books and research has been done on this, and nobody's body walked away with some other entity. Nobody's. Granted, there are dangers on the astral plane, truly, and you need to know what you're doing when you're Everybody's going to walk away with some, you know, Joe Schmo Hitler, you know, writing it. It's absurd.
Yes.
We were handed these ideas and teachings from the original founders, from the Bishop and Wall, on those. And it was told to us, this is all you need. You have everything within. And with this printed knowledge, you can begin your journey in a safe, altruistic manner. And they went so far as to give us warnings. If those with that much knowledge give us warnings, we better pay attention to them. There's no need for astral projection or anything else on another plane when we have so much work to do
here.
And we have everything we need. It's a matter of waking that mind up and continuing to work, as you said, on compassion. Naturalism, and it springs up spontaneously.
Yes, and you?
I would call that a question. Okay. Regarding, you know, is it possible, is it not possible? There's no question people have astral travel. It's just a fact. It's a fact. But here at the lodge, the problem is it's dangerous. And if anyone new walks into this lodge and receives the impression that we're suggesting that you ought to try it because it's fun, then the karma of that is on us because we allow that to go on. Because the warning is don't do it until you really are developed and you know it. And if you are that developed and you really do know it, then you won't be talking about it to other people
right.
in public. So the issue there is the lodge has to protect itself karmically, because if we start teaching all these people magic and they go start trying it independently, without being responsible, and they're doing it because they think we suggested that they do it, then there's some real karmic issues for the lodge.
Yes, no.
Did the founders in the writings, did they put any specific examples of people about this astral travel? Did they put any specific warnings other than saying don't try it because it's dangerous? Are there any specific examples they gave?
Wait.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah. Is this in. Can it,
yeah,
okay,
well,
go.
Look at the history of the Theosophical
movement.
Back in the 1875 when it began, it was an age of spiritualism. And there was a lot of seances and talking to the dead. The Civil War was on. Lincoln was even professed to use them, or his wife was very much into that. And they would get messages. Lincoln got a message that he was going to be assassinated,
yeah.
He was going to be killed. He had a couple times. People told him that. You know, but the atmosphere at that time was the opening. The last 25 years of every century, there's more spiritual intent. There's more an emphasis in that spiritual realm. So these things burst forth. In the 1975, we had other awakenings, and you know, our responsibility is just to remember who we are and what we're doing, and that what we do is important because we're creating our own future. But we're also creating the future for the world. Now we look at the world, we see how disgusting it is, then the only thing you can do is clean up yourself.
Yes. Really quick, because it's the last one.
And the thing is, we may never know if somebody's form has been inhabited by a black entity, because, I mean, we're told that they're all around us, that we're rubbing shoulders with soulless individuals. And we always hear about whenever there's some shooting or whatnot in the country, the neighbors always say, gee, I never really thought about him doing something like that. He's been very quiet. But the whole idea with passivity, we are strongly encouraged to make sure we keep our minds active.
Very active. And our time is almost up. Next Sunday will be good, because that's where we're going to be expressing more information on karma. So hopefully we'll see you all then. Thank you.